on page Tuf Vav. And what we're discussing is found at the top where it says Sea of Bays. Okay, that's, remember, it's been a very long time, bless you, since we've actually done a piece that had a top part from the Shulchan Aruch. But the top line is taken from the Shulchan Aruch, and then the commentary on the bottom, of course, is Nishmas Avram. So in Sif Beis, he writes, Mishayesh lo choli shel sakana. If someone is dangerously ill, mitzvah lachale oleves haShabbos, it is a mitzvah to violate Shabbos for him. Vazariz harezem shubach, someone who is energetic is to be praised. Vashoel, and someone who asks a shayla, shouldn't die, harezem shofech damim, he is a spiller of blood, he's a murderer. You don't ask, you do. That's the Shulchan Aruch's very unambiguous statement about what one does. So, the Nishmas Avram first comments on the opening clause, Mi sheyesh lo choli shel sakana, and he comments on the word me, the someone who is dangerously ill. So who is someone? Because there are different categories of someones, and that's what we're going to explore. So his opening someone, so to speak, is an ubar. So an ubar is a fetus. So before we see it in the Nishmas Avram, we're going to look at the separate sheet, source Aleph, because that's a key source that he's going to relate to. It's a Gemara in Erchin. The Gemara in Erchin is dealing with the issue of capital punishment. And what happens if the person who is slated for capital punishment is pregnant? So what do you then do? Granted that it's difficult to actually carry out capital punishment, all the different caveats that, it's hard to get to that situation, almost unimaginably hard, but it happens, and it happens with a pregnant woman. So so what happens? Mishnah says, Ha'isha sheyatz ale hare, if a woman is going out to be executed, ein mamtinen la ashtelet, we don't wait for her to give birth, meaning they'll execute her pregnant. And the idea there is that it's considered to be cruel to make her wait. It's cruel to have a death row. So since in order to get to this point, we have to have exhausted every option to try to find her innocent. Remember that there is an imperative for a Beis Din of the Hitzilu Ha'idah HaRotzeach. They are obligated to try to find the person innocent. They did everything already. They've gone through all the avenues of proof, all the ways to question the witnesses. Nothing's shown up. So at this point, she's going to be executed. We don't delay. Do it right away. Ha'isha sheyashval hamashber. However, if she is already on the birthing table, she's gone into labor. Then mamtina lachetelet. Then you wait for her to give birth. Dot dot dot. The rest of the Mishnah. Then the Gemara's comment on it. Amr of Nachman, Amr Shmuel. Rav Nachman says, quoting Shmuel, Ha'isha sheyashval hamashber umesa b'shavs. If the woman actually does go into labor, not talking about the execution case now, but a woman goes into labor and she dies on Shabbos. Rachmana litzlan. Mevi'in sakin umekarim es kresa umotzi'in es havlad. So they bring a knife, they cut open her belly to get the child out so the child should live. This isn't a capital punishment case. This
probably
is stuff.
It happened a lot because people die a lot in childbirth.
Right. I mean, one would imagine that, divide the rate of mortality and labor by 7, and you have the number of cases in which it would come up. Obviously, it's not perfect as a calculation, but yes, it would have happened. So they will attempt to do a C-section, essentially. So the Gemara says, Pshita. Well, why is that even a question? Of course you do. My Ovid, what have you done wrong? In other words, what malacha of Shabbos have you violated by cutting open the body? Mechatech b'basarhu. The body is dead. So you haven't actually violated anything by cutting open the flesh in order to get the child out. So Amar Rabba, lo nitzricha lahavi sakin derech rishus harabim. Rabba says you're right, but the point in our Gemara was to talk about bringing the knife. And what he's saying is you would violate the biblical law against transport through a public domain in order to get a knife there to save the baby. So the Gemara says, well, I knew that. Umay kamash malan. And still, what are you teaching me? Dimisveka machal and shavsa. You're trying to teach me that when you're in a position of doubt, you violate Shabbos? Tanina, I know that too. We already learned that. Misha nafla alav mapoles, that if a building collapses on someone, safek husham, safek enosham, if you don't know whether he's there, he's not there, safek chai, safek meis, you don't know if he's alive, you don't know if he's dead, safek nani, safek yisrael, you don't know if he's Jewish, not Jewish, makes no difference. None of these make any difference. Mefakhan alav esagal, you dig through the ruin to try to find whoever might be buried underneath. So why would that be any different from bringing the knife in order to get the kid out? So he says, yeah, but mahu disema hasam hu dehavale chazaka dechiyusa. You might have said that in the case of the ruin, the person who was buried underneath had a chazaka. Chazaka is a presumed status, last known status. The word chazaka is used in different ways in different contexts, but here it means the person had a presumed status of being alive, because their last known situation was that they were alive. Aval hacha, whereas in the case of the fetus, do havale chazaka techiyusa, there was no such established chazaka. We didn't have an ultrasound. We didn't have any way to know that the fetus had been alive before. Emala, so I may say not. So the caught mashmalan, and that's why he needed to tell me, no, bring the knife and cut her open to get out the fetus, even though you don't know that the fetus is actually alive inside and you have no presumption of life. That's the Mishnah and Gemara in Source Aleph about getting the fetus out on Shabbos. Explicit in this is the idea that we break Shabbos to save a fetus. Right? That's the real point that we want to learn here. So now go to...
It's interesting. Yeah. You break Shabbos to save a fetus here, but if you've got a woman who's going to be executed on a non-Shabbos day, you don't do anything to try and save that fetus other than if she's in labor.
Correct. Correct. Because the idea there is that if I remember correctly, I haven't gone through that Gemara in a while, but if I remember correctly in their discussion, the point is that it's the fetus versus the mother. In that case, and the mother's well-being, the fetus is considered
anyway.
To be part of the mother.
But you're going to kill her anyway.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So,
but you would be delaying, causing her to suffer by waiting. And I think there's also a piece of it, and again, I haven't gone through that Gemara in a while, but I think there's also a piece of it that relates to the fact that the fetus is considered to be a part of the mother in that case, whereas here, the fetus has already begun the birth process.
I mean, if she's in her eighth or ninth month, the fetus would survive on its own.
Well, it would survive, but it's still functionally a part of the mother until it begins to actually emerge. I think, again, I haven't looked at the Gemara there. When I excerpted this, I took the piece that was relevant. I didn't go through the part that I wasn't going to use. So I don't remember for sure what the discussion is there. It's a good question. If I get a chance later, maybe I'll send you an email with an update on what the logic is there. Okay, so looking at the Nishmas Avram, at the bottom of the page, Mishyesha Cholisha Saikona, and he begins with Ubar, Re'ei Berosh, he says, see the discussion in the Rosh. The Rosh, halachic authority from the 13th, 14th century, and I bring him in source base, we'll see him in a moment, but he says, see the Rosh, Shemevi B'Shem HaRamban, he quotes the Ramban, Shekosev to say, Shemashma mitoch divrei habal halachos, demishum sakonas vlad lachudei, mechalalin afil lekalamechash lidita. You know what, I'm just going to say to see the Rush first, and then we'll see it inside here, because he's just quoting the Rush at this point anyway, and the Rush gives us greater context. So take a look at source base, please. Dealing with this issue of bringing the knife in order to save the fetus on Shabbos, he quotes the Ramban, because of HaRamban. The Ramban, of course, is 13th century, which tells you the Rosh is really 13th or 14th. But because of HaRamban Zal, Mashma mitoch divrei Baal Halachos. It sounds like from the Baal Halachos. The Baal Halachos is the Baal Halachos Gedolos, the first author we know of who composes a code of Jewish law, taking the Gemara and actually bringing the halachic segments out of it. So he says, the Baal Halachos seems to indicate Dimishum Sakonas Vlad, that because of danger to a fetus, and I added in brackets, Vlad technically means child. So I added in brackets, Vlad kolel gamkein ubar, that Vlad includes fetus in our discussion. So he says, Mishum sakana sivalad lichudei mechalalin afilu lekalamechash ladida, that even for the sake of a fetus we will violate Shabbos, even where there's no concern whatsoever for her life. Dahainu de garsinan bishili perakama de erchin, as we learn in the Gemara at the end of the first chapter in Erchin, and he quotes from our discussion, ha'isha sheyashva lamash ber, right? Umesa b'shabbos mevi'in sakin mekorin keiso motzi'in es havlad, where they say that if the woman dies in labor on Shabbos, they bring a knife, they will try to get the child out. So the Gemara there said, pshita, it's obvious. My oven, what did you do wrong? Machatech v'basar b'yamo, you're just cutting flesh. And Amar Rav, lo nitzvacha el l'avisak in derech v'shus harabim. Rav's explanation was, no, because we're talking about bringing the knife via public domain. My kamash malon, what is this teaching me? Del sveik machal on Shabbos. This was all the direct quote, right? V'ika disvirolei, and now he ends the quote from that Gemara, and he says there is a position de'ein machalim mishum nefalim, that we would make a distinction and say, well, you would break Shabbos for a fetus, but you would not break Shabbos for a nefel. Okay, what is a nefel?
A spontaneous abortion.
A nefel is a child who is born without viability, where the doctors say this child is not viable, is not going to make it. Halachically, the classic definition was, could he make it 30 days? But he says, if the child is a nefel, where the doctors say there's nothing we can do, this child isn't going to be viable, then you would not break Shabbos. There is such a position.
You know, how did they know in those days?
They knew based on their experience. In other words, you know, obviously the definition of nefel may change over time.
Years, that's right.
But that's the position. Ella, however, ubra sheheiricha, he gives you a separate case, which I guess requires explanation as well. Ubra sheheiricha means a pregnant woman who smells something. And what he's talking about here is a very interesting idea. I have no idea if there's any sort of medical explanation for anything like this. Mickey's already shaking his head because he knows what I'm talking about. The ubra sheheiricha is a case in which a woman smells food and develops a craving. And we'll see that they actually credit the craving to the fetus. Like the fetus smelled it, registered it, and wants whatever it is. And the concern is that if she doesn't get this food, then the fetus is actually going to die, spontaneously abort. I don't know what happened that caused people to believe that this could happen to a fetus. I don't know what they as a general rule, whenever you see a medical observation in the Gemara, it comes from something that somebody saw, whether they understood it the way we do or whether they had their own, you know, narrative behind it. They saw something. I don't know what happened, but it's a prominent idea in the Gemara, this idea of Ubresha Hiricha, this pregnant woman who smelled something. So he says, we would not break Shabbos for a nefel, elo uber sheheiricha, but the case of the pregnant woman who smelled something, chshasha demisa didahi, the reason why we would violate Shabbos there is concern for her, that she might die if she doesn't get this. Shekol hamapeles b'chezka sakanahi, because in the event that she has a nefel, in the event that she produces a child who's not viable, there's also danger for her. The concern is that if the child dies, this may pose harm for her.
So what's the issue? She has a craving, and then we are mechal Shabbos to satisfy that craving?
Correct. Okay. Correct. And the idea is, because she might otherwise lose the baby, and if she loses the baby, that will create harm for her. We are viewing this child as a nefel. That's what's going on. We're viewing the child as a nefel. And he's saying, then you shouldn't be violating Shabbos for it. If you believe, you know, you don't violate for a nefel. And the answer is, you're right. But the concern is for her. That's what's causing it. V'tayma de yoshevas al hamashber shemesa. And then as for the discussion about cutting open the woman who passed away in labor, time achrina, because we have a different reason there for breaking Shabbos to bring the knife. The reason is because this kid is not called a nefel at this point. This kid is called a child who's been born because she's already in labor. Desulav Yerech Imahu, he's no longer considered part of the mother. Delav Bedidat Talia Elachayu, Bedelas Nu'ula Befanav. He no longer is, depending on her systems to keep him alive. He's actually, at this point, alive, so to speak, inside, and it's simply that the door is locked. He can't get out.
Which makes your question all the more.
Yes, about the child who then is in the. Correct. Adima, do you have sheets?
I have.
Oh, great, because I am out. Okay.
That's so medically wrong. I mean, until the kid is out, the kid is not viable. It has to be able to breathe.
Correct. And their point isn't to state viability. Their point isn't to say viability. Their point is to say he's considered an independent being. And the only thing that's keeping him inside the mother is the fact that he can't get out. But he's not considered to be part of the mother anymore once she goes into labor. That's the argument. That's the argument. I mean, take it or leave it, but that's the position. So he says, "Veleka chashasha," and I added in brackets, "Kolomar leka siba shalola chalel." And then there's no reason not to violate Shabbos for this child, except the fact that she had no known status as the fetus had no known status as a living being. And if you're in doubt regarding saving a life, so you go leniently and you do whatever you need to do to save the life. End of quote. All of this he's taking from Ramban. Okay, so again, to make sure we understand what he said. He said, the Baal Halachos indicates that you would violate Shabbos just for the sake of the fetus inside her, even without concern for her. Then you have this other position that says, no, if the kid is a Nafel, he's not viable, and a fetus inside this mother is not viable, you wouldn't. Only if there's a reason to violate for her, because you fear that if she loses the baby, then something's going to happen to her, or in the case where you identify the fetus as a separate being because she already went into labor, that's when you'll violate Shabbos on behalf of the fetus. So it's a machlokas. He's presenting us with a debate. And then, so that's Ramban. So the Rosh then comments, and he says, "V'lo yadati matzorech l'chol elu hadikdukim." He says, I don't know why you need all of these distinctions that are being drawn here. Glomishpacha sakanas uber below sakanas ubra, because there's no such thing as danger to the fetus without danger to the mother. Below sakanas ubra, below sakanas ubar, and there's no such thing as danger to the mother without danger to the fetus. So he says, I'm not clear on what exactly you're talking about, which we acknowledged, right? We said there's a fear that in losing we're at the end of the second source. There's a fear that if she loses the child, something's going to happen to her in the Uber Shehiricha case, in the case where she smelled something. So why is there even a further discussion? That's the position of the Rosh. Okay. Now let's go back into the Nishma Safram. Let's see. Yep, you know what I did? We are here. Sure. In a minute, I'm going to have to give out the next page anyway. So the Nishma Safram says, see the Rosh. Right? Go back to the number one, I guess, because otherwise you're mid-sentence. Re'ed Rosh, Shemevi B'Shem HaRamban, Shekosev, Shekquote, Mashma Mitoch Divrei HaBal Halachos, Nimishum Sakanas V'lad L'chudei Mechal L'Nafil L'Leka L'Meichesh L'Dida. He says, the Rosh quotes the Ramban, who says that the Baal Halachos seems to believe you would violate Shabbos for the sake of the Vlad. And Vlad, we said, included the Ubar, included the fetus. Even if there's no concern for her. Ulam, however, ika desvirale de'in machal and mishum nefalim. But on the other hand, there's that alternative view that says we would not violate Shabbos for the sake of a nefel, and nefel also includes ubar. So he brought you the both statements. Now, this is an interesting parenthetical note here. Kasav li'agon Rosh Shlomo Zalman or Bach Zatzal. He said, Rosh Shlomo Zalman wrote to me, he says, there's no question. If the kid is a Nafel, right? If the kid is a kid who the doctors have already said there's nothing you can do, then there's nothing to be Mechalo for, and we won't be Mechalo, we won't violate Shabbos. And therefore, he says, you need to edit that line and write Ubar, not Nafel. He then introduces a separate point where this is going to require a little bit of explanation. I'm going to hold the explanation until a little bit later. So skip the rest of the words until the end of the parentheses. Okay? And he concludes with the words, Ela b'chashash adida. He says, you wouldn't violate Shabbos for the sake of the fetus, only if there was a concern for her. So that's the second view that the Ramban quoted. The Karban Nisanel, he then quotes the Karban Nisanel, which is a commentary to the Rush. And he says, the Karban Nisanel, Mosif Gam B'Shem HaRamban, he adds in the name of Ramban, Sha'afilu Ba'atzalas Ubor Pachos Me'arboim Yom, She'en Bochius Klal, Mechalalin L'das Bal Halachos. He says, when the Bal Halachos Gedolo says you violate Shabbos for a fetus, it's even during the first 40 days of gestation. Even then, even though we say that it's not considered fully alive and there are justifications for abortion in certain circumstances, nonetheless, we would violate Shabbos to save a fetus in the first 40 days of gestation. And he says, V'chein re'ei b'tur arachayim simen taf reishit zayin u'beis yosef shamu u'beir halacha. So u'beir halacha, he tells you to see the sources on this that support this contention. Ulam. He says, however, see the Shar HaTzion, who is in doubt regarding a fetus that is less than 40 days old. So here, I come back to the point that we have before in the parentheses. There was a misunderstanding regarding the position of the Shar HaTzion, and I contacted him and confirmed. The way it's written here is not a correct understanding of the Shar HaTzion. Take a look, please. The way he wrote it here, it makes it sound like the Shar HaTzion is unsure whether you violate Shabbos to save a fetus in the first 40 days. But that's not what the Shar HaTzion is saying. Take a look, please, at Source Gimel on the side sheets. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Ubra Shehi Richa, right, the case I gave before, the woman who is pregnant and she smelled something and has this very powerful craving. In the parentheses, Upanea Mishtanim, her face changes color. That's the symptom. Ava Pisha Lo Amra Tzricha Ani, even if she doesn't say, I need this food. So what do we do? This is Torah Yom Kippur. So she says she needs the food, but it's Yom Kippur. Loch Shen Labe Oz Nashi Yom HaKippurim Hu. So you whisper in her ear, it's Yom Kippur. If that calms her down and she says, okay, I'm not going to eat, mutav, good. But if not, you give her food to eat until her mind settles. That's the Shulchan Aruch. It's a remarkable phenomenon. I don't know what this is that they saw that led them to this to it. But the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch take it very seriously. So, take a look at the Mishnah Brura now in Source Dalet. The Mishnah Brura says, Shehiricha, that she smelled, Meichel, she smelled some food, V'yadua, and it is known, Shemei nosnin la'mashemis ava, that if you don't give her that which she desires, he uvlada mesukanim, she is in danger and the kid's in danger. V'enafkamina bein betchilas ibura ubein besofa. The Mishnah Brura says there is no distinction, beginning of the pregnancy, end of the pregnancy, doesn't matter. I understand that this is odd.
Not only that, what is she smelling if it's Yom Kippur? Who's cooking?
And the answer is that she passed someone who wasn't Jewish, or maybe someone was cooking for, not cooking, but maybe someone had food out for a child, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That's easy. The medical part is hard.
There's no such thing.
I don't know. I certainly don't know, but I'm not supposed to. You're supposed to.
Some book that looks at the history of, like a historical book of medicine, if there's some kind of
version. History of midwifery, perhaps.
They just thought that there was such a condition. It might not have really existed. They just thought that this was their explanation for it.
Right. Or women who were pregnant and had cravings, you know, decided that they were going to convince their their husbands, I need food.
That's
on
right.
Your kippur.
Or else I'll
that's
die.
What it is. Right.
That's what they would do.
Okay. So the Mishnah Brura is the Chafetz Chaim, right? Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan. So he wrote this commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, but he also wrote a super commentary on his commentary called Shar HaTzion, which usually just gives us references. And take a look at Source Hay, where the Shar HaTzion gives us a note, and that's what the Nishmas Avram was quoting. Umilashon Rashi Mashma Shehavlad Misava. Rashi's language on the Gemara makes it sound as though the child is actually the one with the craving, not the mother.
Look it up on the internet.
Yeah. But he says it could be that fetuses don't have cravings until after 40 days. He suggests it could be that the fetus won't have a craving until after 40 days and sees Rabbeinu, see Rabbeinu, Manoach and Sarach Yun. So the point is that the Sharat Ziyun's doubt is not whether you break Shabbos to save a fetus before 40 days. That's not his suffix. The Sharat Ziyun's doubt is whether this particular type of danger of Ubra Shehiricha exists in the first 40 days of gestation. That's the question that the Sharat Ziyun is dealing with. So I emailed Rabbi Dr. Abraham, and he confirmed that this is this piece at the end, this Ulam Reva Sharat Ziyun Shemis Tapekel Uber Pachos Merbo Em Yom, reflects a misunderstanding of the Sharat Ziyun. The Sharat Ziyun has no doubt that you save the fetus in the first 40 days. His only question is, will Uber Shehiricha apply in the first 40 days of the fetus? That's what he's talking about. Okay. So the upshot of all of this, the upshot of all of this is that we seem to follow the view of the Baal Halachos that we will intervene on Shabbos to save a fetus, whether because of the fetus or whether because of the mother, and we won't care what point in the pregnancy. It doesn't make a difference how far along it is. Okay, which has practical ramifications. Meaning that happens where a woman knows that she missed her period and then she starts to bleed and she wants to know, do I do anything? Do I go to the doctor? The answer may be that it's too late by the time she starts to bleed. That I don't know, but in terms of any action that's recommended to potentially save the fetus, she is supposed to engage in it.
There are a lot of references towards fetal cravings and mainly the maternal craving because of the change in hormones and whatever. I just googled it.
Yeah. So that means that there is something that could actually endanger the fetus in this fetal craving?
No.
No, just...
It doesn't say anything. I haven't read the whole thing, but there are a lot of references to that.
Okay.
So you're... It's bona fide.
Well,
cravings, but I don't know what the implication is beyond that.
There's a potential of death.
But they didn't know that. They didn't know if you don't satisfy the craving, if what it'll do. And most women don't. They do satisfy their cravings.
But it's an interesting question. If there's such a phenomenon as a fetal craving, what happens to the fetus if it's not satisfied because of this hormonal shift?
Well, in this world, the women go after their food, but they're craving chocolate or whatever.
But is in the literature, is it the fetus that's craving or the mother that's craving?
They don't differentiate. But it says both.
All right, so I got two things to look up now.
Okay. I didn't read the whole thing.
I want to know more about fetal cravings. Okay.
Okay.
Fine. We now move from the first category of Misha Yesh L'Choli Shal Sakana to the second category. The second category is a Tinok. We move from fetus to baby. So I'm going to give you out the next sheet here because we're going to immediately flip over on Tav Zion, and I believe that you all have Tav Hei, Tav Vav. Right? Is that what you have?
Tav Hei, Tav Vav.
Yeah. So you need Tav Zion. Was that Tav Zion that I just gave you?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think I am actually now going to have a problem. Yeah. The rest of the sheets that I printed out were all by mistake Shin Zion, which isn't going to help us. So let me just see if I have more in my folder here. Otherwise, there will be some sharing going on, and we'll do the best we can. Yeah, no, the rest of the ones, I don't know how I did that, but the rest of the ones that I printed were Shin Zion. I apologize. Okay, but we'll work with it. There isn't that much to see on Tav Zion anyway. We're only going a few lines in. Okay. So Tav Vav, we're still on Tav Vav. Tinok, saving a baby. So he says, Re'e Orachaim Simen Shin Lamed Siv Katan Chaf. He tells you to see a section in Shulchan Aruch on this issue of saving the baby. Now, what that section in Shulchan Aruch brings us is a Tosfos in Shabbos, which I have for you here on your sheets in Source Bus. So take a look at the side sheets, please. And he deals here with the question of an eight-month-old a child born after 8 months of gestation. Because the Gemara has this very odd statement, or it sounds odd to my ears, that if a child is born after 9 months of gestation, the child will be fine. If the child is born after 7 months of gestation, the child will be fine. If the child is born after 8 months of gestation, then it is in danger. Now, I've actually heard explanations for this. I think it was to lung development or something. You're nodding your head. What's this?
Well, we just went through that, actually. My daughter-in-law just gave birth to an eight-month gestation, and the baby had fetal distress and ended up in the NICU with on PAP and whatever. She was okay after about 2 days, but the doctors there said they have less trouble with a seven-month fetus than they have with an 8 month fetus. There's something with the lungs, that the surfactant or whatever,
yeah,
and the lungs is less developed.
So that's what I had heard. And then the Gemara has a discussion about what if it's maybe it was a 7 month baby that just went a little longer versus being an actual 8 monther. They have all things, because in the Gemara's idea of it, it seems like they understand that there's actually the same way that people will grow at different rates. So fetuses also, there are some that are on a 7 month track and there are some that are on a 9 month track. So then maybe this is a 7 month track, so it's fully complete and it just waited another week inside or something. So take a look at source Vav, where the Gemara says, Ben Shmona harayu ke'even v'asur l'taltalo, that a fetus born after 8 months of gestation is actually looked at like a stone. And you're not allowed to move him, meaning he's like mukta, because there's no way in their science, there's no way he's going to make it. So he says, Nira Lari, the Ri, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, writing in the 12th century, mm-hmm, says, Nira Lari, the achshav mutter letaltel kol tinokos. He says, we don't do this. He says, in our day, we are allowed to carry any child without regard for how long it was inside the mother. She'en anu bikiyin, because we are not expert in figuring out this was a 7 month or this was an 8 month or this was a 9 month. Bekulam, kimo savi ben tes, we treat all of them as possibly an 8 month or possibly a 9 month. He says, after all, how do you make your calculation? Right? Today, when they tell a woman how far along she is, they count from her last period. So he says, we don't know when the pregnancy actually began. We don't know if the pregnancy was close to when she went to mikvah. We don't know if it was later on. We don't know. So therefore, we can't make a proper calculation of the months. Nira Lari, Demutya Lataltalo, he said, the Ri says you'll be allowed to carry him on Shabbos. Ulamulo b'Shabbos, you could do a bris milah on Shabbos. Unless there is some kind of a reyusa, some kind of a deficiency that's visible in his hair and his nails, that tells you this child was not didn't have a chance to fully form. Kedamar b'perak ha'arel, as the Gemara in Yevamos says, Amrinan hay bar shiva hu v'ishtahu ye ishti, where they talk about a child coming out after eight months, being a child who was really a 7 monther who was simply delayed. Tosfos tells you that as a matter of practice, we are not going to treat this child as a non-viable child just because he came out after 8 months. We're going to still treat the child as just like any other child. That's what Tosfos says. We don't know how to make the calculation, and that's what's brought in the Shulchan Aruch that he quotes back now on page Tafav. By the way, Mazel Tov.
Thank you. Yeah. 24th of January.
Mazel Tov. So he says, Ulam, however, Bismaneinu, in our day, Mechalin es HaShabbos al kol tinok, that nowadays we violate Shabbos for any child, Vafilu ben Ches, even if he's an 8 monther, Gam pachos mi ben zayin machalin es haShabbos. And I have news for you, even if it's less than 7 months. I keep seeing in my head all those headlines from that fellow at AOL about the distressed baby. You didn't hear about this?
No.
All right, I'll tell you after. It's not worth interrupting in the middle, but what a nightmare of a PR mess. line here. He says, even if the child didn't make it to 7 months inside, we'd violate Shabbos, but makom she'eshev sharus l'tipula, the incubator, where we have the ability, through a NICU, through an incubator, to be able to take care of the child. And then he says, ure'e b'chazon ish, see the chazon ish, shegam posei kein mitam she'ishtanu ha'tavaim. He rules that way as well for a different reason. He says nature is different. Even if you'll tell me that in their day, an 8-month or didn't make it, yeah, it's not the case. Whether it's because of nutrition being different, or whether it's because of our medicine being different, or whatever it is, these children nowadays make it. And now I refer you to Sor Zion on your side sheets. He says, Yesh Toin, this is the Chazon Ish, Rav Avraham Yeshaya Karelitz, writing in what was probably the 1940s at this point. He passed away in the mid-50s. So he says, Yesh Toin V'sovrin, Dehanolad Kodem Tes Hu Nefel. He says there are people who make a mistake and believe that if the child is born before 9 months, the child is a nefel, meaning non-viable. Umisyashin heimenu. And they give up hope. Ve'enem zirizin berfuaso, and they aren't energetic about taking care of him. Vizu taos, that's a mistake. Kalakolshin nigru saro v'tziparnav haryusafik ben kayama. If his hair and his nails have been completed to whatever stage he considers to be complete, that's a sign that this child could be viable. Uliyesh poskim hu bechezkas vade ben kayama. And according to some authorities, we consider him definitely viable. V'chayavan lehishtadel berfuaso. You are obligated to try to heal him. U'machal and all of us a Shabbos berfuaso. We would violate Shabbos for him. V'chein mi'idin achshav uvdos rabos de b'nei ches chayim u'miskayimin. And he says, we've had many, many cases of such children thriving. There's no reason to follow what is, at this point, an outdated concern about the 8-monther. Now, it's not that outdated if they're still going into the NICU for it, but that's the statement. He says that's not an issue for us. Back in the Nishmas Avram, he says, Gam al tinok im tismonet down. Tismonet is a syndrome. So he says,
it's a Down syndrome.
Exactly. So he says, also for a child with Down syndrome, and here I'm going over on page Tav Zayin, for those who have it, which is basically three of us at this point, the trefa, or for a child trefa. Trefa meaning that you know he's not going to last 12 months. He has something wrong with him such that he can't. Mechalinus haShabbos im kolo chadasha. We would still violate Shabbos for this child, assuming that he's formed enough that we could call him a viable child for now. That's what we would need. The kafkas of a tzitz Eliezer le'inyan adam treifa shemachalan alavas haShabbos, and so wrote the tzitz Eliezer for that matter regarding an adult who is a treifa. If an adult has some kind of injury such that he can't live 12 months, we still break Shabbos to save him for now. The Ureima Shekasavnu Lahalani says we're going to come back to this in another 123 pages. We'll have to deal with this issue again. So he says, see what I'm going to write over there, which is basically what we've said to this point. Good? Okay. I'm stopping the recording for the next piece.